Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. A little over 5 months ago, our world changed. On March 11th, the National Basketball Association suspended its season. On the same day, we found out the married acting couple Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson both had COVID-19. 2 days prior to that, we spoke with Dr. Bruce Dart, executive director of the Tulsa Health Department, about the novel coronavirus and the first case of COVID-19 in Tulsa, which was from someone who had traveled internationally. Those 5 months feel to many of us like more than a year. Our daily lives have been upended, and for many of us, jobs have been lost, and with it, health insurance. And millions of Americans have tested positive for the virus, and almost 200,000 of us have succumbed to the illness. Those intervening months have seen the death of George Floyd, a presidential campaign stop in Tulsa, and now a mandate that all Tulsans wear masks in public. Schools are bracing for a disrupted fall, and the sports and cultural events that we love have nearly all been on hold, with the exception of some professional leagues that have gingerly restarted with differing levels of success. So many of us are now familiar with tools like Zoom, the ubiquitous computer meeting platform, and many companies have decreed that they don't expect employees to return to their offices until 2021 at the earliest. Today, we speak again with Dr. Dart to get an update on the pandemic locally and regionally, and in addition, learn the three W's: wash your hands, wear a mask, and watch your distance. And he also offers some reflections on where the pandemic fits into his long career. Dr. Bruce Dart, Executive Director of the Tulsa Health Department, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dr. Bruce Dart, welcome back to Medical Monday. Thanks so much for joining us. And just a little more than 5 months ago, we had the first case of COVID-19 in Tulsa. My, how the world seems to have changed. I guess, can you reflect on where we were then? Does that feel like 5 years ago to you, as many people have opined that it feels so long ago? Or, where where are we now?
You know, it's been an amazing 5 months, and frankly, it's been a big blur, you know, because we haven't had what we consider normal here since that time. So in the 5 months, we've gone from, you know, one case to over 11,000 cases here in Tulsa County. And the sad part is that from zero deaths due to COVID-19 up to 113 deaths due to COVID-19. So it's been a tragic 5 months all the way around.
Now, I think the science has really come along and has improved our understanding and changed our understanding. I guess early on, you know, that fateful night, I think it was March 11th or 12th, when I actually was watching the Thunder game that got postponed or suspended. And that was the night we found out, I guess, Tom Hanks and his wife Rita Wilson were down in Australia and they were infected. And it seemed like really the world changed on a dime. And it you know, that, I guess, weekend, a lot of restrictions started going into place. And we had, you know, soon thereafter, our very first case of a novel coronavirus infection here in Tulsa. But early on, we didn't know if it was community spread. We thought it was really only coming from people who had traveled to hotspots like China, or, as we soon came to find out, many of the cases where there was a big hotspot in New York City came from Europe, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so that's why, you know, back in January, we actually started monitoring people traveling from these hotspot countries, you know, specifically China and Italy and South Korea to start us off. But knowing that if we weren't able to mitigate those who might possibly bring the virus back here, what was going to result was community spread. And, you know, this is a virus that's extremely efficient in how it transmits from person to person. And so we weren't able to mitigate. And now, unfortunately, we do have widespread community activity.
Now, we, at the beginning, I guess, didn't know about mask wearing. It was something that I think certain individuals did, but the science really wasn't there. And I remember several press briefings and CDC advisories that said, you know, you can wear a mask if you want, but I don't think you have to, or it's not required. And I mean, our thinking on that has certainly evolved. I mean, how have you seen the science on that change?
You know, it truly has. And that's really a good question, John. I mean, you know, if we knew now what we knew back in April, more than likely we would have been recommending masks back in April. Back then, as you recall, there was a huge shortage of PPE, or personal protective equipment, for physicians. We wanted to save the masks for our healthcare workers, and we really didn't know the efficacy of cloth masks and until we had time to actually do the study. So we know much more now about how to mitigate the virus and really the role that masks play in that mitigation. So masks are an extremely important tool in preventing transmission, and the science continues to support that, but it also supports that it's important to wear the right type of mask.
Yeah, so not all masks are created equal. What are your recommendations or the health department's or CDC's recommendations on what kinds of masks have the most efficacy and which kind should we avoid?
The data on cloth masks has been very good. A two-ply cloth mask will stop the virus from emitting only like 2.5 inches from your face if you have a hard cough. And of course, we all know how well N95s and surgical masks do. They're very efficient. And really, the masks, and this is fairly new data because you saw many people wearing this early on. You still see some people wearing, but those masks that are really our neck gaiters that a lot of people use in wintertime, a lot of bikers use, those and bandanas have been found to be extremely inefficient to use as masks because they don't contain droplet spread when you cough or talk and sing or yell or scream. So cloth masks, surgical masks are all great, and just for the average individual walking the street. And just at this juncture, I wouldn't recommend using a bandana or one of those neck gathers to use as a mask to reduce transmission.
You know, I've been, like many people, star for sports. And so when baseball has come back on television, I've watched a couple of parts of games. And I've seen, I guess, pleasantly, some of the coaches and managers wearing, it seems like, regular masks, either cloth or surgical, maybe with team logos. But some of the players do seem to wear those neck gaiters. And so even during the game and stuff. So, I mean, on the one hand, I'm glad they're wearing those. But on the other hand, it seems like the message needs to get to them. So I saw a post from Dr. Dale Bratzler, who is both an epidemiologist and a physician who works at OU and is the chief COVID officer for the University of Oklahoma. And he said that those neck gaiters or bandanas, in fact, may take those aerosolized droplets and sort of almost work like a sieve and break them up into smaller particles and cause more spread. Is that something? So we really do want to avoid those.
Yes, and that's what the science, which really is maybe 7 to 10 days old, is telling us. And our concern is that, right now with when you cough or express liquid, it's in fairly large droplets, but the mask will make those droplets much more small. They become aerosolized, which means they can hang around the air and create an even greater environment for transmission. Whereas without that, the droplets would come out of you and fall. That's why we call them droplets, fall to the ground. So the ability to create an aerosolized situation makes those masks much more dangerous.
Now, in terms of public health, we are at a place where the advice seems to be to stay home if you can. Work from home if your employer lets you and you're still lucky enough to be working in the economy that has, really slowed down from this. But I guess I'm wondering, it seems like at least for the state of Oklahoma, we're in this, I guess, is it still called phase 3, where we're mostly reopened and there seems to be, certainly a lot of pride and a lot of emphasis on getting the economy reopened. And we all do want that. But so we have people, at least wearing masks. We have certainly restaurant servers wearing masks. We still have people doing a lot of takeout, but restaurants now are open and bars and things. And so would you be advising people to still try to avoid that as much as possible? Obviously, especially for the infirm or people with immune compromised conditions, we know that. But I mean, would you recommend that in general?
And you're right. People that are infirm and have immune compromised situations or are high risk because they're older, that demographic, if they could, should stay home still, but we know that we're all social creatures and we need that to be connected. And so that's why we really push and recommend masks, the 3 W's, as we call them: watch your distance, wear your mask, and wash your hands, so that we can re-engage back in society and open up our economy. I think we really can't afford to shut down like that again. So if we're going to be open, it's important that we do it as safely as possible. And these recommendations around mask and distance and hygiene really are the only tools, that to hopefully get human behavior to move in one direction, and that's being compliant and following these recommendations to keep everyone safe.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Bruce Dart, who's Executive Director of the Tulsa Health Department. And we are having a new conversation here in August. We talked last in early March, when it seemed like the world was changing, and boy, has it changed. And Bruce, where are the sort of the hot spots in the world and the country, the United States right now?
So, it's we had heard a lot about, for example, how New Zealand was 102 days case-free. Well, that's no longer the case. They're getting clusters there now. So, and then China was in the same situation, and now they're starting to get cases as well. So we're seeing that second wave come. And as you know, in this country, what happened in Northeast and New York, which has really calmed down a lot, but the South and Southeast, those southern states all the way through Oklahoma and Texas, really are flaring and are considered huge hot spots. Cases that have really risen in a rate that is frightening to, I think, to us scientists who look at the data. So, you know, and I think as we talk about these cases and these case rates, it's not so the case rates we have to be concerned about. It's who's going to the hospital, or is our hospital capacity still able to handle the influx and the burden of hospital patients? And who are these patients being hospitalized? And we've gone from that high-risk demographic to young, healthy Americans and Oklahomans and Tulsans becoming infected and becoming hospitalized, which we didn't see early on in the COVID response. So the virus is really adaptable, and right now our highest-risk demographics are those younger individuals who are going out into the community, which is fine, but they're going out and not following recommendations to keep themselves safe. So there's still an issue around wearing masks and watching distance and washing hands. So we need to really, I think, get back on and have a conversation about what do we need to do to stay safe so we can mitigate these case numbers and hopefully eventually return back to some type of normalcy, not knowing what that new normal is ever going to look like.
Yeah, and I've seen news coverage where you have certain social situations, outdoor parties even, or gatherings at the lake, or, you know, bars and restaurants where people aren't wearing masks at all. On the other hand, you see reports of, I saw one friend who was at the at a store, Target, and said every single person, employee and patron, was wearing a mask. And he found that very heartening. So it just seems like we're a little bit across the board. But overall, it seems like more people are taking the mask mandate seriously. Now, that was a big hurdle to overcome, or a big heavy lift. And you were instrumental, I think, in being very consistent in your messaging and helping the city and the mayor and the city council pass that mask mandate. But it may have taken longer than we would have ideally liked as health professionals. But, I mean, I guess, were there any lessons that you learned from that? Or I guess the other thing is, where do we stand on the mask mandate? Do we have a way to, I know compliance is obviously, enforcement is an issue, but do we have a way to measure, you know, how successful we are in terms of people complying with the mandate?
That's another really good question, John, and that's really like why I like talking to you, because you always ask the good questions. But this week especially, we've really seen a decline in all the trends that we've the trends that we think are important to follow. You know, our 14-day case trend, our 4 and 7-day rolling averages, we've seen decreases. And you know, we think about what systematically can cause those decreases in these kinds of numbers. And I point to the mask mandate here in Tulsa, and the fact that local businesses and national businesses are requiring masks for people to enter those locations as well. So I think today is pretty clear that if you do mask up, you can be part of the solution to mitigate spread. I think the mask mandate in Tulsa is doing that. And frankly, if we could get 95% of people that live in Tulsa County to mask up every time they go into public, I feel very strongly that, you know, in 4 to 6 weeks, we could really grind this virus into the dust.
Now, I've seen a lot of officials, both governmental and public health officials, comment on the big events, what some people call super spreader events. So sometimes these are church services, sometimes these are funerals. And I don't necessarily want to single anyone out, but in terms of our calendar, there were things like Memorial Day or July 4th. And so in, you know, late July and early August, as the mask mandate has taken fuller effect, we haven't had any of these big holiday weekends. I guess Labor Day is coming up. But the big thing that people are citing is back to school. And interestingly, in Oklahoma and in other states as well, I mean, schools are all over the map and they haven't had really a strong directive. They got recommendations from the Oklahoma State School Board, but the board itself voted down the recommendations of the superintendent. And so the school districts have really been left to fend for themselves, in many ways mirroring kind of how the states or counties have been left to sort of make their own policies, which, you know, in some ways is disappointing that we're not all on the same page. But what I'm really asking you is, what do you anticipate as kids go back to school? Now, of course, here in Tulsa, you know, if you've been following the news, Tulsa Public Schools has, and I know in consultation with you, has decided to take the first 9 weeks as virtual or online and not come in person. Although I do know that they have really prepared hard for this. And so it's not going to be kind of the emergency type online learning that happened last spring when we were sort of forced to go home because, you know, everything was new at that time. So they have much more in the way of supportive programming for students and families, and they have better virtual options. Now, on the other hand, and the school buildings will actually be open, so it's unclear yet, but there might be small groups or things. And I know, for example, the sports are happening, fall sports. I'll ask you about that separately. But in a long-winded way of saying, we have other school districts that have decided to go in person. And so, again, it's different. You know, it's one district is in person, another isn't. What do you foresee that way? You know, I'm going to paraphrase what I know you've said is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your view is kids probably should be not going to school because of the inability to get the physical distancing, and in fact because the teachers are, you know, older folks who may or may not have health conditions. So for now, at least, it seems like, given the amount of community spread, we should be holding off. But, you know, maybe there's a lot more nuance to that. So I'll let you answer.
So that is a really good topic, and we know that schools are reopening really are the hot topic in conversations, not just in Tulsa either, but throughout Oklahoma and throughout this country. And you know, we make recommendations based on data. And you're right. I think it is difficult that there wasn't a specific guidance that came down from the state, you know, that left it to the school districts their own nuances to decide and determine what they wanted to do. And that's why I think it's inconsistent. You've got different school districts that had different plans, and it would just be easier if there was some consistency and people were doing things the same. But that's not what's happening. And you know, we continue to follow the data, and so far, data is pretty clear. And I say that knowing that the in-classroom is a much more conducive to learning platform than virtual. And I understand that, even though I think the school districts really have done a great job this summer in coming up with virtual platforms that allow kids to learn. But I realize the pressure on parents. You know, there's working parents, there's parents who are whose jobs are essential. They have to be at work. They might not have the ability to stay home and be part of that learning process with their children. So, you know, there's no one good answer for all of this. And so that's why we make recommendations, understanding all the variables that go into the results of those recommendations. But, you know, we really focus on health and safety. And right now, with what the data is telling us and with transmission, that's why we recommend that virtual option so that we can keep people safe and keep them healthy. And knowing that now that some people will start school in the classroom, and we continue to work with those school districts and give them the most up-to-date guidance around safety and mitigation that we can. And, you know, we're all in this together. We're all trying to do the right thing for all of our neighborhoods, our families, our schools, and our communities. And I think plans have to be fluid, and we have to adapt to the environment as the data tells us to adapt. And I think we continue to do that. And we'll do that going forward, and we'll continue to work with all the schools, hopefully that we can create an environment that's safe and conducive to learning and get us through this so that we can eventually be all back in the classroom together.
Do you worry, though, about the districts that have elected to go back in person, that there will be, you know, much more community spread, or is that just sort of a silly question and kind of self-evident?
Absolutely. I think our concern, and we'll see if this happens, we don't know if it will, but our concern is that once the schools that start back in the classroom, we'll start to see an increase in transmission. That's going to affect those schools, and of course, that also equates to additional community transmission as well. So, and that was one of the reasons why our recommendation was to go virtual, because we know when people come together, we're going to get increased rates. So we'll see. I know schools are trying extremely hard to do this the right way and as safely as possible, and we'll have to continue to support them and see what happens in the next few weeks.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Bruce Dart, who is Executive Director of the Tulsa Health Department, and we're talking about the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, and local, regional, national stories related to that, and of course, Dr. Dart's role here in protecting the public's health. And Bruce, I wanted to ask you about sports. So, you know, even Tulsa Public Schools, which is the largest district in Tulsa County, which has elected to go with a virtual learning model online for not the first 9 weeks, and will reevaluate as to whether, you know, they'll come back in person later in the semester. But they have green lit sports, and so both at the high school and the collegiate level, I know, you know, college football is a religion around here. What are your thoughts on sports, and is there a difference, you know, in contact sports versus non-contact sports, that kind of thing?
So, you know, in quantifying this by saying I'm a huge sports fan, and especially football, love all things high school, college, and professional sports. But, you know, I think we've got some great examples, and schools can't put themselves in a bubble like the NBA. And schools can't afford to test players every single day like the NBA. And Major League Baseball has shown us that if you're not in a bubble, you're going to get transmission throughout the team And so, you know, at this juncture, without having the ability to do instant rapid testing for everyone who's participating, I think it's a risk to do contact sports this fall. And because we're going to get, just by the nature of the sport itself, you know, that physical contact of football especially, we're going to get disease transmission. So it's going to be, I think, a difficult fall in a lot of ways. And we'll see where this goes. But right now, those sports that result in physical contact and contact that's extended on the field really will translate, could translate to risk of transmission, and which might end up in some teams, at least if not shutting down the team, you know, shutting down those players who are at risk. And so we've got guidelines and recommendations to hopefully impact that in a positive way, but the potential is going to be there. And that's really why we recommend it to either push back fall sports, postpone fall sports, or you do what some of the colleges are doing and look at spring. So, you know, there's no good option here because we all love sports and we want the community back to normal, but we're going to continue to focus on what we think the most safest options are.
I mean, asking you to put on your crystal ball, and I know you have no direct role in this, but do you think the Big 12 will, I mean, I know they've publicly announced that they're going to try to have a fall football season, and I think we're anticipating the SEC and ACC of the Power Five to continue that. But you know, the Big 10 and Pac-12 just this past week have declared that they're suspending their fall seasons and looking to do spring or canceling altogether. I mean, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what the epidemiology shows.
And that's absolutely right, you know, and because we don't know how it's going to go. Like I said, we do have the NBA to look at, but those players really are truly in a bubble. And but Major League Baseball players were not, and we know the stories behind disease transmission on specific teams. And I think that's what that will mirror what could possibly happen on both the college and high school playing field if those sports take place.
I want to ask you one more question about how things are going, and then I wanted to sort of focus on how this has impacted your personal life and career. But what's the story with contact tracing? You know, I've heard national stories about the difficulties in contact tracing where the tracers are actually trying to call people and either not getting through or getting hostility as a response. How is the local regional effort at contact tracing for coronavirus going?
You know, we're working extremely hard. We have about 60 disease investigators and contact tracers. But I think, you know, we're starting to see now where people, they don't want to talk to us. And some people, I can't say everybody. But I think that, as you may have heard, there's been a pretty big lag in reporting results. And then when there's a long term between test and report date, it makes contact tracing really difficult because of the time that has passed us by. And then, you know, with I think there's concern that if people give us the information we're asking for, that somehow they're gonna be implicated in some kind of activity that really is not their fault. People don't know they're sick for the most part when they're out and about. So, but we've seen it kind of mirror what we're seeing across the country and having a more difficult time getting people to open up to us and trust us enough to give us the information that we need to mitigate spread as much as possible.
Okay. Well, Bruce, I want to ask a little bit about how this has affected you personally. I mean, my understanding is you have worked tirelessly and essentially nonstop since, you know, February. Not that you weren't working hard before, but this has obviously taken over everyone. It's taken over the news cycle. It's taken over, you know, the front of everyone's mind. It's taken over the back of everyone's mind with anxiety and sleeplessness and fear, especially for those that have been affected or had a family member affected. But so how does the coronavirus pandemic play into your career? You've had a long career in public health. You've been in Tulsa for nearly a decade. You were in Nebraska before that. Give us some context on where this fits in.
So, you know, yes, I've been doing this 40 years in, you know, over three states. And I think all my public health colleagues will tell you that none of us have ever dealt with a situation with this length of and degree of time and the politics that have really impacted how we go forward and how we do our work. So most infectious disease outbreaks, they come, we respond, and they're over fairly quickly. Well, as you said, we've been doing this 5 months. And I think the thing that really makes it hard on people is that there's no end in sight, and we don't know what that end is going to be. So people are scared, they're angry. We all know about the politics now that has impacted the response. And yeah, I basically haven't had a day off since February.
Oh, wow.
And you know, people are angry. I mean, I personally have gotten a lot of threats about some of the recommendations we've made at the health department, and not just from Oklahoma, but from people all over the country.
I've read about public health officials both resigning due to pressure, but also the threats. But you're saying you're getting threats not just from local people, but from people all over the country.
You know, it did, especially at, when some of our news here went national, and people, they seek you without knowing the entire story. They seek you out, and I think they direct their anger towards you for whatever it is that they're angry about. So, yes, unfortunately, I've gotten threats of bodily harm. I've gotten some threats that could be construed as death threats, and frankly, none in the past few weeks, which is kind of nice, But it's been a rough year because we're just trying to focus on saving people's lives, and that's what's important. And we're not going to stop doing the right thing. That's our purpose for existence. That's our mission of this department, and we're going to continue to do everything we can to keep people safe. And not everyone's going to agree with that, and we get that, and we understand that. But we have to do the right thing, and our goal is to have the least impact on people's lives as possible. And that's why we do the work we do, and that's why we've taken some of the action that we've taken.
Well, there's that old cliche about no good deed goes unpunished. And it certainly seems like you're out there trying to just fight for truth and science and do right by people and by the community and the public's health. And, sometimes it is imbridging on what people perceive as their personal freedoms to try for the greater good. And so, unfortunately, some people react in a very negative and brutal way. But I'm very glad to hear, and I thank you personally and also on behalf of our listeners for the work that you've been doing tirelessly in Tulsa County. I guess I'd like to leave you with one final, predictive question. I saw where Dr. Redfield, the director of the CDC, had said that the fall and winter, it was kind of a hanging crepe, a sort of a negative projection. But, are you worried about the fall and winter being sort of our worst ever in terms of, flu season coming about and then this second wave or, maybe third wave of coronavirus?
I really am. It's the perfect storm of bad things happening. We don't have a vaccine for COVID yet. We know that the flu season traditionally starts in October and goes usually through April, early May. And thank goodness we do have vaccine for influenza, but we're going to have these two highly efficient respiratory viruses that are circulating through our community that both have high morbidity rates and also mortality rates as well. So, yes, I'm definitely concerned about this fall. And, the sooner we get a vaccine, the better. And that's why, in the meantime, we've so pushed the three W's and to get people to do what they can to keep themselves safe and watch your distance, wash your hands, and wear your mask. And it's hard that we don't have clinical therapies and vaccines to both prevent and treat this virus. And so, what we can do as individuals is so important until we get those medical tools to hopefully, once again, grind this into the dust.
Well, Bruce Dart, it's been a joy to talk to you. It always goes by way too fast because I have so many more questions. But I guess if you'll give us permission to talk to you again, and hopefully the next time it'll be like retrospective, looking back on the era of the COVID-19 pandemic. But somehow I don't think it'll just be another update at some point in the future. But really, thanks for the work that you and the department are doing. And thanks so much for coming on the program.
And John, thank you. Getting the word out through your program on NPR has been incredibly helpful. And of course, the work that OU has done to support this response has been amazing. So thank you right back, and let's just keep fighting this together.
Dr. Bruce Dart is the executive director of the Tulsa Health Department, and he was our guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. Please observe those three W's, wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.